Right, today is control your thoughts easily. And it's been mentioned a few times this morning, usually followed by a snigger. Sort of like, control your thoughts easily. Like you can do that. Well, you actually can. And I'm going to explain why it's been difficult up till now. And today I'm going to get you involved in doing something that will teach you that you can get in control of your thoughts. And you can change them to drive you towards what you want, not what you don't want. Because most of the time, the thing we're thinking about is the thing we don't want to happen. And I call it feeding the monster. Because there's a little problem and it appears and it's on the skirting board and it's this big. And we look at it and look at it and look at it and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The more we think about it, it gets bigger and it grows and develops into this huge thing that overtakes every thought you have. Okay? It's just a thought. It's not real until you make it real. My consulting room at home, I had an idea of what I wanted. I had very little money at the time, but eventually I got it built, I got it decorated, I got it kitted out. All at a time when I seemed to be skint. But because my dream was that room, and it now is exactly as I dreamt it would be. It's the colour, it's got the furniture in, it's got everything. I even came across a chair that looks like a hand. It's a black sort of false leather chair, not real leather chair. And it's great, because when people come in, I say, do you need a hand? Pick a seat, do you need a hand? So, it's all about your thoughts. So I'm going to explain now how your thoughts work. And I have very simple views on life, and the more simple you make life, the less problems you have. Okay? So I'm not going to talk about different parts of your brain. I'm going to say that when your mind works, it works in two different ways. The bit we call the conscious, and then the other bit most people call the subconscious, but sub means under consciousness. And I call it the unconscious. Because we're aware, that's your conscious, and we're unaware, right? And so I call it the unconscious. And it's very helpful in the line I do to actually talk about it as being unconscious. Okay? So forgive me if anybody's used to hearing subconscious, just switch it over in your head. Now, your conscious mind holds 8 bits of data. If I now tell you my phone number, 01 526 8 3 2 5 6 3, and ask you to remember that, you will not hear the rest of my talk because that has filled your conscious mind if you remembered it. So ignore it and just listen, because your unconscious mind has 100 trillion data connections and they can all connect to each other in multiple ways. Somebody has calculated that the amount of different connections you can make at your brain in any one time is more than there are atoms in the universe. There's a scary thought. So your unconscious has this unlimited ability. Your conscious mind has very little ability. So you might ask, what's the point in having a conscious mind? Well, a conscious mind is what makes us different to the animals. The animals will go out and it's all about survival, eating, sleeping, and procreating for the next line of animals. Because that's how they ended up there. And that's all that happens. With us, we have choice. You had the choice this morning to say, I think I would like to do this. I'd like to go to the John Fretwell Centre and listen to this wonderful talk. Didn't you? Yeah. Okay. So you had free will to do that. You then had the free will of how you got here and everything else. So we do make choices with a conscious mind. But for most of the things we do are unconscious runs-us. Okay? If we think of anything, the unconscious mind goes, I've got a program for that, and it runs it. Okay? If you think about getting a chocolate biscuit out of the cupboard, you don't have to tell your legs to work. It takes you to the kitchen, right? You don't have to do things. When you first learn to drive, and the instructor says, right, you know, this is how the clutch and the gears work. Right, put your clutch in, put it in gear. Now, let the accelerator down. Bring this up, but not too fast. And this one wants to be a bit faster than that. And then he says, mirror. And we go, mirror, I can't do that as well as this and this. But when you're used to it, you do it straight away. You get in the car now, you don't even think about it. If I took you all in the car park now and said, I'll give you £100 for anybody that can jerk down the road in the car like that, like you used to be able to do, none of you could do it. I guarantee you, none of you could do it, unless you've been practicing and heard me talk before. Okay? Because as soon as it started to jerk, you put the clutch in or you'd accelerate. You wouldn't get to that point that you did when you were learning. So when we're born, we seem to be born with a personality. Anybody who's got kids know this. They're all different. All your kids are different. You've brought them up in the same house. They go to the same school. They've got the same sisters and brothers. But they're different. So somehow we start off this life with some programs that is our personality. We start off with a survival system. And we're not only do we have a survival system, but we then have people who look after us in whatever way. If you're lucky, it's your parents. If you're less fortunate, somebody looks after you. Okay? And so we have this survival system. So from the age of nil till up until your sixth birthday, we tend to look around and see all the things that are going on. We just try and copy it. We don't know why we're doing it. We just see it. And we quite often accept all the things that are happening around us as though that's how life is. That's how it should be and so on. If you're fortunate and your parents are loving and caring, you'll grow up to want to be in a loving and caring relationship. If your parents fight all the time or one's an alcoholic or does drugs, you might go down that path. At the age of six, you become a bit more discriminating about what you're taking on board, and you start to look at things and you ask questions. I think it's getting younger now, but this is when we go, why, mummy? Why, mummy? And mummy gives an answer, and then they go, but why? And you think you've just answered it, and you answer it again in the same way, and it carries on like this. And what the child is actually saying is, well, what are the precise parameters of when I should do this? But they haven't got that language. Because they want to know the rules and regulations so that once they know the rules and regulations, they can do it automatically. So instead of having to be told to put your shoes on, you know when to put them on, when to tie them up, and when they need cleaning. And once you get that, you can do it automatically. So everything we do is based on some process in the back of the mind that goes, oh, I've got a program for this. Now, for 99.9% of a life, brilliant. But sometimes we have a program that interferes and messes up a whole life. Now, I do a thing called brain bargaining. It's just that I've worked out how it works, if you like. I suppose lots of other people have done it, but I just do it my own way. And my whole emphasis in every single thing I do, whether it's switching off pain or removing anxiety, is that your unconscious mind will not harm you unless it harms you less than the thing it's stopping you from. And I'll explain that in a simple way. You and a friend are going down the road jogging, and he sees that you're about to go under a bus. You're just about to cross the road, go under a bus, and he kicks your legs away from you, knowing he'll break your legs. Right? That's your unconscious mind. It doesn't mind hurting you, providing it stops you from something even worse happening. And quite a lot of times, that is death. It thinks you're going to die of something. This was the first thing I ever came across when I started doing this work, and I found how ME and fibromyalgia works. And it's simply that that person's system turns them off a bit at a time. First of all, it gives them a message saying, slow down, stop it. Because everybody who's got ME or fibromyalgia is driven, right? These are not lazy people. This is why they get so annoyed if anybody says, get off the couch and just get on with things. Because they're not lazy, they're the exact opposite, and that's why they're ill. Your unconscious system knows what to do that's better for you. But if you don't listen to it, it keeps coming back. So when we have a message from our body, an ache or a pain, please find a seat somewhere. Yeah. There's some over that side. So when we have an ache or a pain or anything, we need to listen to it. If we drive through, sometimes we'll get away with it. But if we keep doing it and keep doing it and the body is worn out, it will do something to you that makes sure you can't get out of bed. I even think that colds and flus are the result of this. Because although it's a virus, if your immune system's strong, it fights the virus off. So when you overdo things, you drain yourself and you put yourself in a state where other things come in. And if it puts you in bed for a couple of weeks, the unconscious mind goes, well, thank God for that. I'm sure they were going to blooming drive themselves into an early grave. And it might then learn from that and go, well, what if I made them fatigue on a regular basis? What if I wore them out? What if I gave them a lot of pain? That'd stop them. Anybody here got ME or fibromyalgia? Does it stop you? No, it doesn't. Yeah. Okay, so as soon as they get some energy, they go whoosh. And this is the equivalent of somebody driving 100 miles in a car, 100 miles an hour in a car, in a 50 mile an hour zone. They overtake everybody else, and then the police pull them up. Right? And they stay in the lay-by for a while, and then they go, oh, I've got to do 120 now, and they off they go again, and then the police pull them up. Right? If you're ill on a regular basis, there's a message there. It's telling you to stop it or calm down or something, right? You're depleting your immune system and it allows other things in. And it'll allow them in because it goes, oh, chance of a break. But if you're driven, you keep fighting through it. So it keeps giving you worse and worse things until you can't do anything. And then it goes, have you got the message now? And you go, no, I'm going to fight through this. I'm a fibro warrior. If anybody ever posts anything on my site that goes, I'm a fibro warrior, I go, stop it. It's just the opposite of what you need to do. Okay? So, we get messages, but when we talk to ourselves, that's not a message from the unconscious. The unconscious doesn't use your native language. It does pictures, it does metaphors, it does all sorts of things. When we store a memory, we've got the whole lot. We've got the picture, we've got the feeling, we've got the words, we've got the, everything. And we go somewhere in our head and we find it again. Now, you don't remember things that are trivial. So your complete storage memory is of things that have some significance to you of some sort. You don't remember what you had for breakfast 27 years ago on the same day that we're here today. You don't need to. It's just not there. But if something traumatic happens, you will remember it for the rest of your life. Or you will build a program to avoid it, and then the brain will go, and I don't want to show you this again. So if you've had a severe trauma when you were younger, you might not even know what that is. And in fact, it's more likely it was really traumatic if you don't know what it is. Whereas if you know what it is, then, you know, it's willing to show you it and say, that's the problem. But you see, in life, it's not what happens to you, it's how you deal with it. Because what happens to you happens. Things happen. We have no control over it. We can only plan what we want to happen, and everything else just muddles around. It does what it does. Right? You have no control over anybody else. Those of you who are parents will know that. Those of you who've got husbands will know that. Okay, we have no control over anybody else. We barely have control over us and our thought processes and our thoughts and feelings and everything else. So, this is about controlling your thoughts. And when I say controlling your thoughts, nobody's here today going, oh, I have all these wonderful thoughts and I really wish I could control them, right? So we're actually talking about the thoughts you have that you'd rather not have, okay? That's what this is about. The issue is that we have thoughts at an unconscious level, and they're triggered off by these associations where it goes, oh, I've got a program for this. So you see something, or you smell something, or there's a set of three or four things all arrive at the same time. And if Auntie Doris used to hit you around the head, and she wore this perfume that only Auntie Doris wore, if you smell that perfume again, you'll duck. Right? Because the association will be there, how do I avoid this? And you'll duck. I'm briefly going to break off from where I was to explain the difference between anxiety and depression. This is my views on it. You won't find this in any book in the world, except mine when it comes out. Okay. This is what I've spotted from helping hundreds of people overcome anxiety. And when people come with depression, it's not as easy. So I had to work out, why is it that something I can do for somebody who's got anxiety works, and something I do for somebody with depression works, but then the depression seems to come back. And so here's my thoughts on it. Anxiety, in every case I've dealt with so far, and it's hundreds of people, starts off with a trauma early on in life, when you're a child. It's quite often 4, 5, 6 years old. It's not very often it starts as an adult, because as an adult we can go, oh, you know, I got mugged in the car park, but it was late at night, it was dark, it was a rough area and all that. And we can actually rationalise it. But imagine if you're 4 and something happens and it's really traumatic. You go into this thing where things take over your body and you go, what the hell's this? And you've never felt anything like that before. You have no words that can tell you this is fear, this is distress, this is anxiety. There's nothing. There's nothing you can fall on there to it. And so in that second you go, I don't want to feel like this ever again. And you go into fight or flight mode. And fight or flight mode is you get prepared to stand your ground and beat this person off. Or you run away like merry hell. Okay? Anybody seen any scary movies where they run off and hide and then the person goes past them, hasn't seen them, and they run out again? Stop it. Okay, so you're prepared for one of those two things. The thing is, this sets up a program that operates in the background for the rest of your life, unless you get it dealt with. So anxiety is just, in that moment we go, I don't want to feel like this again, and we go, how do I not feel like this again? Well, I'll spot it coming next time. And so you develop hypervigilance. You're forever going, something bad's going to happen, I don't know what it is. And that's how you are for all your life. I helped a lady the other day who was 75 overcome the anxiety she had all her life. She had a hunch on her back because she'd been doing this all her life. Just imagine that, that's guarding you. Right? Your body shape changes for different moods that you're in. Okay, and by changing your body shape, you can actually change that mood. So there is a way of changing one thing to change the other. So that's anxiety. You're just hyper aware for the rest of your life. But this means you're stressed for the rest of your life because you're on the verge of fight or flight all the time. And stress is where half your body is in overdrive so that you can run the fastest you've ever run in your life to escape this saber-toothed tiger. Or you're going to fight it. You're going to wrestle it to the ground and kill it. And during that time, you only need strength in certain areas. You need strength in your legs to run like merry hell. You only need enough vision to see the tree or the rock that you're going to hide behind, or the bush or whatever. And you don't need your stomach working. This is why when we get stressed, we have stomach problems, because your stomach shuts down and it goes, well, I don't need to process this food. You're going to be a meal in a minute. Why would I need to process this food? It shuts your vision down so you can only see the escape route. You don't need to see everything else. That's irrelevant. That would take up brain power and everything else. Right? So this explains why when you're anxious, you have all sorts of illnesses as well, because the chemicals that go around your body are actually the wrong chemicals all the time. You're in this fight or flight mode all the time. And this is why we say, I live on my nerves. Right? So this is not just about thoughts. This is your nervous system, a bodily function that changes. And it keeps you like that forever until you come to somebody like me and I sort it out for you. Right? And I have sorted it out for lots of people. So there is a way out of it. You don't have to put up with anxiety. Now, I'm going to explain the difference between that and depression, because depression is a lot more difficult to shift. Depression, if you're diagnosed with depression, you will be told you have an imbalance of chemicals in your brain. And they treat it as though that's the cause, not the effect of it. And I guarantee you it's the effect of it. Because your thought processes, not your conscious ones, but your unconscious ones, are going back to a program that says, I can't deal with this, I'm going to hide. Okay? So you imagine the same scenario, young child, traumatic thing happens, and they go, what the hell will I do? And if they don't fight or flight within a brief second, it goes further down the brain to a bit more primitive bit of the brain, and it goes, play dead. Right? So when you get depressed, all that's happening is a different program, and it's going play dead. And my best description of it is that it's like a big duffel bag that you have. It's invisible on the outside, and it's darkness on the inside. And you pull it up, and you hide in the darkness. And because it makes you invisible, you can just stay there. Right? And you pull the duffel bit at the back, and you peer out this very slight hole, and you're in darkness, and you're looking around, and you're going, is this thing over yet? Is this thing over yet? And when eventually it's over and it's safe to come out, you'll peel it back a bit. But if anything triggers off that unconscious process again, you'll go back in there. And this is why people can go from really highs to real lows. Because they can be at a party or something and everybody's going, oh, it's lovely to see you like this. And a few seconds later, it's gone. Something's triggered it off. Bang, they have to go back into the darkness. Now, your unconscious mind thinks that's a wonderful place for you to go. It's safe, you know, nobody hurts you, you're invisible, you lose all your feelings. So it isn't a feeling of sadness, depression, you have no feelings. But you have no feelings because you're invisible and somebody might tread on you. Okay, so that's the difference. And when I've helped people and treated them as though it's anxiety and took the anxiety away, people with anxiety have learned how to deal with things because they were always spotting it early on to deal with it. But people with depression, every time they have to deal with something, hide. That's all they can do. So they never learn to deal with conflict. So one of the first things I have to do with any client is say, get yourself a book on assertiveness. Learn how to deal with conflict. There's ways of doing it. You don't have to fight conflict with conflict. There's ways of nicely saying, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. But thank you for the offer. Okay? Anybody says, will you do me a favour? I usually say, it depends. Never start with yes. Once you've said yes, you've got the job, whether you like it or not. And any excuse you come up with, you've still got the job. Okay? And then you feel guilty. And then you feel angry with them for asking you, but actually you're angry with you for not saying no. Okay, so let's talk about changing those thoughts then. One fact that, unless you've heard me talk before, because I always mention this, one fact that everybody should know, and hardly anybody knows, is that your unconscious mind does not understand negative words. Okay, whatever you think of, just imagine you've made a picture of it. So, I'm going to talk about chocolate biscuits, I do like to talk about chocolate biscuits. You sit on the settee and into your mind springs an image of the fact that you've got a packet of chocolate biscuits in the kitchen. And you see it in your mind and the taste buds go, ooh, yummy, chocolate biscuit. And then we go, I am on a diet. I mustn't have the chocolate biscuit. Now, the brain hears you've got chocolate biscuits in the kitchen. It hears the yummy. It knows you love them. And then it hears, I have a chocolate biscuit. Doesn't hear the mustn't. Right? So you sit there and you're convinced now that you've just told yourself you're not having one. And then you go, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit that are in the kitchen. I really mustn't open this packet of biscuits. Okay, I'll just have the one. I won't eat the whole packet, right? And then we start eating the whole packet and we go, I don't know why I'm doing this. I really don't know why I'm eating this whole packet. At least I haven't started the second one. And then we start on that if we're not feeling sick. Right? So every time you talk to yourself and you mention what you don't want to happen, your unconscious mind will try and get it for you. Right? Whatever you think of that's negative, your unconscious mind will go looking for it and go, we'll have a bit of that. Because it's out to look after you. It's out to make you survive. It's there to give you a good life. Right? So when it gets it wrong badly. Anxiety, depression, all these things, it's just got it wrong. But at the time, it was probably a really good program. But who wants to be run by a five-year-old? Anybody here want to be run by a five-year-old? Unless you've got a five-year-old, and then you'll know that you are run by a five-year-old. Okay. So, this is what we're going to do now. First, I'm going to show you how chemicals change in your body just by your body shape. So I want you to forget all the nonsense you've ever heard about mind and body as though they're two different things. They work so much in conjunction. There's no thing, such thing as I've got a physical illness. You know, it's all right for them, it's just all in the mind, but I've got a physical illness. No, the two work together so much. And one triggers off the other. So before I do that though, I'm going to talk about past, present and future. Look at this, you're getting my whole book in one session here. All right, sorry, I thought somebody asked a question. Okay, past, present and future. We only live in this moment called now. It's all we have. Right? Every moment of your life when you were in the past was lived in now. And we worried about the future. But when we worry about the future, we nip into the future and we live that worry as though it's true and it's happened. Right? Now, worries aren't, oh, well, here's the worst thing that could happen. Here's the best thing that could happen. Let's pick something in the middle range. Right? We go, oh, I'm going to worry about this. What's the worst horrible thing that could happen? And then we go there. In our mind, the mind does not know the difference between reality and thought. So it takes you there. So we go, oh, I had a guy once who was, phoned me up, he said, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. And I said, well, obviously I don't cure cancer, so what do you want? And he said, I want to be positive for the next 9 months until they know what's happening. So I said, okay, so what's your biggest fear? And he went, oh, I'm not going there. Which told me that he had a big fear. And I needled him to the point where he told me that if I leave the bad language out, he was going to die a terrible, agonising death. And I said, good, that you've told me. Okay? Which was to break his state of mind of, he's going to die this terrible, agonising death, because then he was angry for me, was a split second, and then he realised he didn't need to be angry with me because I wasn't actually saying it was good he was going to die. And then I worked with him. And the thing I said to him was that if you have that in your mind and you go, well, I'm not going to mention it, that is what is in your mind. So in this moment, he will be dying a terrible, agonising death in 9 months' time. How on earth is he going to be positive for 9 months? Right? So I said to him, well, look, I'm not a doctor, and I can tell you that probably is one of the options. Right? That might be what happens to you. And let's accept that that might be one of the options. One of the options is that you'll get there in 9 months' time and you'll go, thank God I had cancer because it's made my life turn round. I worked all hours, I had no time for friends or relatives. I realise what's happening in life now and I've changed my life so much for the better, and it wouldn't have happened had I not had cancer. I said that's the best possible outcome. Or that you've been misdiagnosed might be the best possible item. And I said, but then there's a range of 1,000 things in between that. And you're not thinking of any of those. You've just gone straight to the worst one. I can tell you all now that you all do that. Every worry you've ever had has always been about the worst possible outcome. And then you've rehearsed it. And you've actually shown your brain, this is what I would like to happen. And you've given yourself all those chemicals that have got you down now for this thing that might never happen over here. What a waste of life. Who's a worrier here? Most hands going up. Okay, I'm going to give you a challenge now. Just briefly, I want you to think of 3 things that actually happened that you'd worried about. I've never had anybody thought of any yet. Okay? You might worry because something's happened. But you don't, if everything you've ever worried about, so few of them have actually happened that you can't even remember that one happened. Right? So what happens is we sit here now. We should be these wonderful chemicals of being in this lovely room on a nice day, enjoying ourselves. But if we're over here in this misery, we've got different chemicals going around the body as though we're actually there. But we're going there for something that's not going to happen. And the funny thing is, as we approach it, we'll be going along going, oh, that terrible thing next Tuesday. Oh, that terrible thing next Tuesday. And then it doesn't happen. And then we go, what can I worry about now? Ah, right, there's that horrible thing next Thursday. And then we head off. And all the time we're loaded up with these rubbish chemicals. Because whatever you think about, you'll produce the chemicals for, and you'll live that life now. But you're here now. You're in this lovely safe room with lovely people, right? There's no danger, there's no problems here. And yet you can fill your head now with all the problems you've got. But they're thoughts, and thoughts aren't real until you turn them into something. And you could say, well, sometimes I just get these thoughts and I go down and I'm depressed or whatever. And that's your unconscious thoughts working. Right? But you can bring some things to consciousness and deal with them. And I guarantee if you start to do the tips that I'm going to tell you in a few minutes, you can change your life. Okay? So first thing I want you to understand is that is joy everywhere in the world, every culture, every place. This is going into sadness. You come round, you defend yourself. And this is depression, which goes, you keep out as well. Okay? And your body shape has to change to get there. When somebody comes to see me, I say, well, that problem you got, just take yourself to the last time it happened. And they go, ooh. And I go, I'm just going to move your arm. And I move their arm, and they go, oh. I go, well, no, keep thinking about it. They go, I can't while they've moved my arm. I have to put their arm back so they can have this horrible problem. And I go, well, doesn't that tell you something? Just move. When you're in that really deep, dark, depressed state, move. But I tell you, the one thing you won't want to do if you're in a deep, dark, depressed state is move. Because it thinks it's a safety thing for you. And if you move, you'll break the depression. And it doesn't want you to break the depression because it's a safe place. So we have to say to it, hey, you know, I've twigged now. You think you're putting me somewhere safe. And you're not. You're putting me into this horrible bloody place where I could even take my own life. What the hell are you doing? Right? You've got this wrong. I don't want protecting like that. Right? Remove the depression. You remember I said about the little monster? If you look at the monster and you keep going, oh, it might grow, you are giving it significance and it bloody grows. And then you go, it is growing. Oh, I knew my depression would come. Ah, it's getting even bigger now. Right? It's all thoughts. The moment you shrink it down and you go, not having this, it goes away. Right. Okay, so I want you to think of something nice. I want you to all sit up straight, put your heads up, put your shoulders back. I cured a woman of anxiety a few months ago, and I taught her to lift her shoulders up and drop them back down, put them down. All the ladies do that. All the guys do that. Okay. And she wrote and said, not only did this man cure me of 34 years of depression, I got a 6 grand boob job for free. Okay. So, do that. Think of something that's happy and nice. And as you do, I just want you to change your body shape and still keep the happy, nice thing, and change your body shape and start to come down and just nod your head down and bring your body forward a bit, okay? And try and keep that happy thing. And notice how difficult that is. Stay down there. Think of something not very nice, not something too sad, okay? And as you think of that not very nice thing, I want you to bring your shoulders back up, head up, get in that joyous position and try and think of that sad thing still. See how difficult that is. You have had two changes of chemicals in the last few minutes. One from thinking happy thoughts and the body shape, and one from thinking sad thoughts and the body shape. And the brain went, oh, we're sad now, let's have all the right chemicals. Come on, we don't want those happy ones. Right? And you just replace one set of chemicals for another. And it is that simple. So, we're going to get on to my final technique, because I want to allow the next speaker some time to prepare, one like I got. I want you to think of something that's bothering you at the moment. Okay? It can be as big a problem as you like. I want you to pop your hand out and cup your hand so that you could put something on it and it wouldn't roll off. Okay? I want you to now take that thought out of your head and place it on that hand. And I want you to use all your senses now. I want you to feel it in your hand. Bounce your hand up and down. Notice that if this is a problem, this is going to be weighty, isn't it? And the bigger the problem, the more it's going to weigh. Right? So feel the weight of it. Give it a texture, a colour, a smell, a sound. And keep going until you can really see it in your hand. You can really visualise it there, feel it, smell it, taste it even. All right? And as you've got it there now, I want you to throw it away as hard as you can. Okay? That's why I moved out of the way. Okay. Now, this is you incorporating something whereby I told you a few minutes ago that your mind doesn't understand the difference between reality and thought. All right? So, you think you've thrown that away, but you didn't throw it very hard. It's not pantomime, but you didn't throw it very hard that time. So I want you to pop your hand out now and put it on there again. Now, for some of you, this will have changed. This will be weighing less. It will be smaller. The colour might have changed. But whatever it is, pop it out in your hand again. And as soon as it's real, throw it as hard as you can. Okay? So you've thrown it away. Okay, now we're going to speed up the process, and we can even add a bit of silly music, something like the Benny Hill tune. Right, okay, so put it on your hand, throw it away, right, and now faster, on your hand, throw it away, 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 on your hand, throw it away. Okay, have a little shake, right, get it out of your system. This tells all your muscles that you feel different. Now pop your hand out, try and think of the original problem. Has anybody still got it at the same intensity? No, not one of you. Okay, so this is the answer. This is the answer. If you throw away a message, if that message is pertinent for you to keep, it will keep coming back. So you can throw things away, and if it's relevant or it's safety for you, it'll come back. And then find out what it is and get it dealt with. But if not, just throw it away. Okay, you have the method now of going in your head and going, I don't want this thought anymore. And I'm going to give you a bonus technique. Okay, so now we're going to do a similar thing, but you're going to imagine that you have negative as a tattoo on there and positive on the back of your hand. Okay, so I want you to pop your hand out, think of a problem of any sort, and place it on your hand. And as you do that and you put it there, are you very clear what you've got as a problem? As soon as you've got it there, twist your hand quickly and flick it so that you see the back of your hand. Now this is called an anchor. So what you'll find is once you've done this lots of times, you'll think negative thoughts and your hand will come out and you'll go, what's that doing there? And then you go, well, I must have thought something negative. What was it? All right, and it'll help you. So as soon as you flick it, you've actually said, I don't want that thought. I'm throwing it away. But I now want you to think of what you actually do want. Because I can guarantee you that first thought was, this is what I don't want. Right? I don't want this problem. Right? And everybody who comes to see me, I go, what is it you would like? And they tell me what they don't like. And everything else in the world is what could be the option. So I have to narrow it down. So just think, what is it you do want? Now, can anybody think, or is anybody here not think of the exact opposite of what you don't want? Anybody brave enough to do that, to go, I've got this thing, I don't know what the opposite is. So you've all got it, right? So this is what I don't want. We put it on a hand, we flick it over, and then we have to think. So if I keep thinking about that, I'll get that. So let me give you an example. You're in a relationship and it hasn't been great for a while, and you start worrying that it will end, but you don't want it to. You still love the person, and you go, oh God, my relationship's going to end. It's going to end. Now your unconscious mind will go, right, what's the practicalities? Who's moving out? Who gets to keep the cat? Who gets the car, you know, the kids, the whole thing? And you're working down that line. So you'll start to see adverts for flats and all sorts of things, because it's going, breaking up, we're breaking up, we're breaking up, we're ending the relationship. If you actually say, but I want to stay in this relationship, what is the exact opposite of ending a relationship? Starting one. Okay. Now, wasn't life different when you started the relationship you're in now? Huh? There's this wonderful person that comes into your life and they can do nothing wrong, because you don't notice anything wrong. You see all the wonderful things about them and you think they're the most wonderful person ever. But 2 years down the line, they squeeze their toothpaste wrong. Bastards. Right? They're horrors. How dare they do that? How dare he leave the toilet seat up? He knows that infuriates me, right? Okay, so all I'm saying is, if you start to think about what you want and what you don't want, you have to separate them out. Because thinking about what you don't want will get you that. So just that simple technique. Don't do it every time you think of something negative, because apparently all of us have about 70,000 negative thoughts a day. That's a lot of thoughts. Eh? So you'd all end up with wrist problems, wouldn't you? Repetitive strain, oh, throwing another thing away. But anything that really bothers you, just see if you're thinking about it from the wrong way. Because now you understand that your unconscious will get you anything you want. You have to ask for the right thing. Okay? You just ask for the right thing. You ask for a positive thing. I want to do this. I'd like to make it happen. You don't have to know how you're going to make it happen. You've got 8 bits of data in your conscious brain, and we try and do our thinking with it. Pass it over to your unconscious as you go to sleep at night and say, I would like the answer to this. The very next thought you will have might be posed by the unconscious that goes, well, what do you want? Because how can it work on getting you something if it doesn't know what you want, if it only knows what you don't want? Right? Because when you visualise that thing, it's as though you want it. So you can't have a "I don't want a chocolate biscuit" thought. There's no picture for "I don't want a chocolate biscuit." There's only a chocolate biscuit picture. Right? And if you visualise the end of a relationship, just look at the picture you're making now compared with, wouldn't it be great if we got back to how we were when we first met each other? Because if you start behaving like you did when you first met them, they are likely to start behaving like they did when they first met you. And if they don't, it probably is the end of your relationship. Okay, so we can't control anybody else. We can barely control us. But just control those thoughts. Don't give it a lot of airtime to little monsters. Right? And even getting angry with it and going, "You can get out of the room," that's feeding it. Right? Any emotion you give it, if you just go away. And there's a sweet little story. I had a client who comes on a regular basis. She has depression. I'm learning an awful lot about depression from her. And she goes away really happy, and then a few weeks later she comes back. She's always better than she originally was. But I sort of get her to a lovely state, 8 out of 10, sometimes even 10 out of 10. And then she comes back, she's a 3 or a 4. But she comes in and she goes, "You're a smart ass," she said. "I've got this wart down here. It's a double wart. Look at that." And I went, "Yeah, please put that finger away." And she said, "Well, what can I do about it?" She said, "I've tried everything." And I said, "All you need to do is ask it to go and then treat it as though it's gone. You don't have to do it every few days or whatever. Just say it once. And then next time you think of it, just go, 'You're still here. I thought you'd gone.'" Right? She said, "But I've tried everything." I went, just try that. And I told her about I'd had a mole on my back, and I'd said that to it, and it fell off about 2-3 weeks later. And it looked like it was a bit of a dodgy mole, and it went. Just like that. She comes back the following week, said, "I thought you were an idiot last week. You told me that, and I thought, so stupid. How stupid is Stephen? He normally comes out with good stuff." She said, "And then it went." And she showed me the finger, totally gone. Our mind is so powerful. So if it can give you bad stuff, because that's what you're thinking, just imagine the opportunities you've got if you use it and you tell it, it can run a program all on its own. It can even develop the program. Because at the moment, your unconscious only runs the programs you have. And if it hasn't got a good one, it just gives you the one it's got. So don't just think about, "Oh, I want this program removed." Think about, "Well, what could I ask it to do?" Since I've sort of tapped into this, I now just have regular thoughts of, "Oh, I'll leave it with you," and I tell it an issue I want it resolving, and it tells me the answer. Might be the next morning, could be a couple of days later. And the amount of times I do just general research, I'm on the internet or whatever, and I read something, the amount of times the following day a client comes and I've got the answer from what I read the day before. Never 2 days before, a week before. It's always the day before. And I go, "Oh, I read this yesterday." And then I use it and I get these wonderful results. And I go, "Well, I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, let's have more of it." We're not here to suffer. I don't care what your belief system is, we are not here to suffer. We are here to learn, and suffering is not learning, it's learning the wrong thing. Right? If you have a pain and that pain continues, pain is just a message saying you've got a problem, sort it out. When you can no longer sort it out, if you fell off a horse 20 years ago, you don't need pain in your back to tell you you had a problem 20 years ago. And I talk to people's unconsciouses and it switches it off instantly. And it's like a little miracle. I know how it works and I bloody cry. Right? But I do it for 9 out of 10 people. I can switch pain off and it just goes. Because the message is a stupid message. They've been hurt in the past, and it's the same with the pain of anything that's ever happened to you. If you're carrying that pain on, it's not about the original problem. It's about how you feel about yourself because of that original problem. Right? You just have to look after yourself better. Now, I don't know if anybody's waiting to come in, but shall we do what the other person did? Right. I want you to all look inside yourself and look at your own self-worth and give it a score out of 10. Okay? And now, whatever score you've given it, unless it's 10, I want you to understand this is you evaluating yourself. This is not anybody else on the planet. This is nothing to do with what anybody else thinks of you. This is how you value yourself. And if you've given yourself less than 10, I want you to go home today and think of how you can go up through those numbers. Because this is your score of you. If you've given yourself a 2, you're running your life at 20% of what it could be. And there is nothing to stop you in this moment now. I'll be a 10. Right? And even if you go up one score from a 3 to a 4, give yourself that 1 and try it on. And when you go home, just think about what I've said and realise this is your assessment of you, and you can make it 10 in an instant. That's all you have to do. Give yourself a higher number. And what I will say is, if you're going, oh well, I'll give myself an 8 then, just think why you're not giving yourself 2 more. Okay, I hope I've made you think and entertained you somewhat. Thank you for being a lovely audience. I've been Stephen Blake. Please fill in the... there's a prize draw thing in the middle of the brochure that you've got. If not, come and get one. Get some brochures for people. Get some cards for your friends and relatives. They're no good on my table. And one person a few weeks ago passed a card on to somebody who the following day went to take a life and rang me instead. And this is the woman I'm still seeing who's doing all right now. Okay, so it's been wonderful. Thank you very much. And thank you.